the 29th day of the month of Marcheshvan, and we are Erev Rosh Chodesh tonight, tomorrow Rosh Chodesh Kislev, and it's always wonderful for me to be able to learn with each and every one of you this week on a Monday morning. So let's begin our Shas contemporary cases in Shas class by first expressing gratitude and thanks to Joseph and Leon Rackman in their sponsorship of today's shiur in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Joseph's father, Manuel Rackman, Marin Harav, Menachem Ben Harav David, his Nesham Shel Avin Aliyah, an erudite, a rabbi of rabbis, an incredible leader, a manhig, and we remember him. And we learn the Mesorah, Joseph, through you, and so much of we have that personal access to you and from you. Of course, the world has learned from and has access to his writings and to his teaching and to his Torah. But what he has contributed to the Jewish world and the Jewish conversation and leadership. And Rabbanim, Biblical Council of America, remembers and recognizes, and Rabbanim that have fallen in his footsteps. So we feel very thankful to have you as the link in the chain that shares lots of his Torah. So his Nesham should have an Aliyah. It's a big, I know it's a big, awesome, daunting responsibility, but we appreciate very much you, the both of your response, your sponsorship this morning. It should be a merit, a schus for his neshama and for your entire family. Okay, so let's get started. So the transition that we're going to share this morning, and part of what is kind of on the leapfrog of the topic that we've been discussing till now, to date, discussing Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa and who's responsible and damages Nezikin, I thought it would be appropriate for us to transition, if we can, a little bit into what is a little bit, seemingly a bit of a different topic, but certainly a Shas contemporary concept, and we find it in so many areas of Jewish life. But I just want to start with kind of two main ideas, I guess, examples. And these examples, I guess, stem from the first idea, which is how many times when we'd go to stores in the past, how many times have you seen a sign, whether it's a department store or whether it's a bodega or any type of anything, you break it, you pay for it. Or lovely to look at, this is one of my favorite ones, lovely to look at, delightful to hold, but if you break it, we consider it sold. You know, those types of things that hang on the walls of gift shops around the world. And the reason why these signs hang on the walls is because store owners, they realize the risk of accidental damage and wish to avoid problems before they come up. You know, if you are in the store and you break something, so are you held responsible? So we're going to discuss the Mishnah in Maseches Bava Kamma today, discuss the first source of what, you know, is the primary learning in the Tershah Ba'al Peh, the oral law. But I just will start with these two basic cases. I just found that there's so many. But in 2006, I read an article. The BBC reported that there was a 42-year-old visitor of the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge. So he tripped over an untied shoelace, and he broke, when he tripped, three Chinese vases that they estimated were valued at over $400,000. So now, maybe you read about that, maybe you remember that, and of course there's so many others. And then there was an example of a situation that happened in August of this year, where there was a tourist who broke the toes of a 200-year-old sculpture by sitting on it to take a picture. If you remember, there's like an Austrian tourist who leaned as though, if obvious, he, you know, he learned the lesson. He leaned over, he was posing for a picture, and there was a plaster cast statue that he leaned on, and there was cameras that saw it. I could send you the video if you haven't seen it. But the question, of course, is that he broke the toes of them, and he was caught on video doing so. And the question, of course, then becomes is who's responsible? Is he responsible? It seems that it's fairly obvious that he would be responsible. So sometimes, obviously, we know that the damage that's done is far more serious than a broken vase or a busted Rubik's Cube or, you know, various high-profile cases. So what's the difference? You know, are there differences? Should the breaker be liable? Is it obvious? So the question is why or why not? What is the level of a person's responsibility regarding other people's property in general? You step on a person's property, you damage something that's on the property. How do you prove that? You know, in the case of the museum, it was in Italy, I believe, So they had cameras they were able to show and to prove that what he did. So we're going to learn in these sources that we're going to learn together that there are certain key passages from the Gemara Maseches Bava Kamma, and the main source, which is for the laws of damages. And when a person is muad, we're going to see muad, it's muad la'olam, we're going to explore the extent of human responsibility. And some of the things we're going to address is, when are you liable for compensation for damages? At what point? You know, what if you break something by accident? So are you still responsible? It was not your, what if there was a sign there? Should it matter? And when you're putter, when you're exempt from liability, you know, when you are exempt from liability for accidental damages, when does that happen? And I guess more importantly is like, what are the theoretical assumptions that underlie, you know, these ideas that if you break something accidentally, then you're still responsible? Is there ever an exemption from chiyuv, from liability for intentional damage? Is there ever a situation just because a guy did it intentionally? Maybe there is a situation where you damage somebody that you are exempt, that you're potter. So let's start with the first thing. The first thing is in source number one. We have 8 sources here. We're going to go through here together this morning. And really, we begin with a concept of innocent carelessness. That's kind of how we'll start this. And the Mishnah, Maseches Bava Kamma, on Chavav Amud Aleph 26a, states a basic principle that is concerning damages that people cause. Now, what is this principle? So the principle is in source number one. The Gemara says, the Mishnah says, the first Mishnah, source number one, that man really is responsible for damages he causes. How do we know that? From these three opening words of this Mishnah. Adam is muad la'olam, that a person, is considered muad. What's muad? Muad, I'll say loosely, is translated as he's considered forewarned in all situations. And so therefore, he's chayev, he's liable for damages that he causes. So that means you can't really pledge a sense of ignorance, because at the end of the day, this Mishnah is telling us that everybody is muad. Everybody is considered forewarned in situations, and therefore there's damage that you cause. So does that mean if it happens by accident, you're still obligated to pay for something? Does that mean you could say that I didn't have the research, you know, at my fingertips? So maybe it's not okay. So the Gemara, so the Mishnah explains the specifics. Bein shogeg, bein mezid, bein er, bein yoshen. And that's an interesting part of the explanation here, is that it makes no difference whether he damages accidentally or b'mezid is on purpose. Now, on purpose, we assume that that's obvious. And now we'll get to why the Mishnah listed it the way it does. But b'shogeg, which means he does it even accidentally, bein er, whether he's awake, or bein yoshen, means if he's awake and he's cognizant and he's, you know, conscious of what he's doing, so then that seems obvious. Why does the Gemara explains, like, why does the Mishnah have to tell me something that's so obvious? If he's awake and if he's b'mezid, then clearly that goes without saying. I will get to that. Bein yoshen, or even if a person is sleeping, and this is something that I referenced in some of the things we've learned previously, that in a situation where a person is either physically sleeping, or even in figurative sense that they're asleep, they're still held responsible. There's a certain liability, culpability. That's the concept of Adam is muad la'olam. A person is considered forewarned in cases of damages. And we have to figure out what are very specific exceptions to these dinim, to these rules. But we're just learning the Mishnah to begin with. Not only that, but we see that sima es ein chavero v'shibra es akelim. Not only that, but if someone blinded his friend's eye, or he was shibar es kalim, means he broke his kalim, he broke his vessels. So here the Mishnah says, mishalem nezek shalem. He has to pay the full amount, not chatzi nezek, not anything else. He has to pay the full amount, no matter what. Meaning what we see from this Mishnah is that a person is chayev, a person is liable, even for breaking something accidentally, even in his sleep. Those are the parts that are eye-opening. These are the parts that are seemingly nuanced, certainly distinct from a person who is awake, from a person who is doing something on purpose. But if a person even does something accidentally, you're chayev. Now, we know this is also true in Hilchos Shabbos. So, for example, even if a person, let's just say you're stretching your arms and you're like in your bed, and you stretch your arms, and by accident you put your arm onto the light switch, you put the light on. So you're still chayev. Now, the obligation of a person's, you know, demerit, or what a person's penalty is, these are the world of some things sometimes we don't really understand. The difference of the penalty, the penalty weight might depend on what it is that the offering that a person has to give. So you still have to give, for example, a carbon chatas if a person opens a light switch accidentally. Why? Because at the end of the day, he did still something that was mechal on the Shabbos. He didn't do it on purpose, but there's a certain lax you know, lacking of awareness that happened, a certain mishap that took place, and so therefore it's accidental, and therefore even in his sleep you're chayav chatas, you would still be obligated. Can't say that, oh, I didn't mean to do it. So even if you didn't mean to do it, maybe the fact you didn't mean to do it will mean that the amount of penalty is less, or maybe klapei shamaya in the heavens, it's not considered as severe. But even if a person does something accidentally, you have to take responsibility for it. And I think that so far seems fairly obvious. I think the sleeping part of it might be less so. So the Gemara teaches us that this liability, where is this found? Like, what's the source? Anytime you learn a mission, anytime you learn a topic, you have to know what the source is. What's the biblical pasuk? So we find, of course, we know that this is all found in Parshas, at least for to begin with. It's all found in Parshas Mishpatim. Parshas Mishpatim, the pasuk tells us, if you look in source number 2, the pasuk tells us, "Vim oson yiyev and osata nefesh tachas nefesh." Famously, but if there is a fatality, and we have to see the context of this, so you're going to give a life for a life, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yad tachas yad, regel tachas rogel, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot, kfiya tachas kfiya, burn for burn, petza tachas petza, chabura tachas chabura, a wound for a wound. Now this is where the Gemara explains, based on this set of psukim, we're going to see what that means. Like, we know there have never really been actual, you know, a tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot. Now, why that's so? It's monetary. We're going to see what that means. So look at source number 3. When the Gemara says, I just wrote a quote for you, the whole pasuk in source number 2, so we can have it right before us, and we can explain in its detail. So what is a biblical source again for the liability, for the chiyuv of accidental damages? And again, we're trying to figure out how could you be obligated for something accidental? Mazid on purpose, of course we get it. So the Gemara says, Menahani Mili, from where do I know this idea of blanket liability for damages? When I say blanket liability for damages, that's the conclusion of accidental and sleeping. So the Gemara says, Amar Chizkiya v'chein tana deve Chizkiya. So the Gemara says, Chizkiya says, and it was also taught in the academy, in the Bei Chizkiya, that means in the academy, in the yeshiva of Chizkiya. So the Pasuk tells us, Amar Kran, the Pasuk tells us in Sefer Shemos, Perek Lachaf Aleph, Pasuk, in these Pesukim that we quoted, 23, 24, 25, that the Pesukim in Parshas Mishpatim, it tells us, Petzo Tachas Potza, what does that mean? He has to compensate for a wound on account of the wound he inflicted. Now, what does that mean? So the Gemara says, based on that excerpt, now again, I could have just shown you just source number 3, but source number 2 is 20, Psukim Chav Gimel Chav Dal Chav Hey, and Petza Tachas Potza is just a quote from these Psukim. It's an excerpt. I'm just extrapolating from these Psukim. Now look what the Gemara says. End of source number 3. The Gemara says at the end of source number 3 is the Chayvay Al HaShoygeg Kemezid. That's where things get interesting. So the Gemara is simply saying, from the fact that the Pasuk says, from the fact that the verse says, Petzo tachas potza, the fact that the Pasuk says that he has to compensate, the context of this verse is to compensate a wound on account of the wound that he inflicted, it tells us that the injurer, the one who causes the damage, is held responsible, is accountable for the accidental damages, as he would be held responsible for the premeditated damages and for the damage beyond his control, like, you know, he'd be obligated for the willful damage. And that's what's fascinating. That's where we kind of give ourselves a little bit of direction here, a little bit of focus as to what this Gemara means. L'chaivo al hashogeg kemezid val ha'oynes kirotzon. These are the words that are fascinating. Now Rashi explains, like, what is this? What's this Gemara? This is just a furtherance in the idea that whenever you learn a piece of Gemara, you have to really understand that the purpose of the Rishonim, of the commentaries, is to understand that we really can't truly understand what the Gemara means without the commentaries of the Gemara. It's similar to the same way we can't understand what the Psukim mean without the Gemara. It's the relationship between the Tershu B'Chassav and the Tershu Baal Peh. So Rashi explains on this Gemara in source number 3, how do you know when you say that L'chaivay al hashogeg kemezid ve'al ha'oynes keratzon, that you're held responsible, accountable for accidental damages as for premeditated damages and for damage beyond your control, just like willful damage? That's a pretty long, you know, pretty big jump. Like, what's the reason? What's the explanation? So Rashi explains the methodology of the oral Torah's derivation. So how do we explain that? So look at source number 4. Why is it? Why does this teach me about accidental damages? So petza tachas potza, Rashi says. So kra yiseiruhu lahach drosha. Now that's interesting. That when the Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim Chof Aleph, on Chaf Hey, meaning Perek 21, chapter 21, verse 25, when it says Petza Tachas Potza, you should know this is a superfluous phraseology. This is extra. It's Kro Yiseru Lahach Derasha, but this is therefore coming to tell us that it's superfluous. Why? In what cases and context is it superfluous? The Hach Siv, because we know. And we've already been taught, there's already an explanation, and we haven't already been taught because this pasuk is in Parshas Emor in Sefer Vayikra. But from Rashi here in the Gemara in Bava Kama, so it says that, that a man was already liable for accidental damages. Where were we taught that he was liable for accidental damages? That's in Parshas Emor, Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Yutes, Pasuk Chaf, chapter 24, verse 19, verse 20. So when the pasuk already says, Ki yitei mum Ba'amiso, Kasher, Asa. We'll see the pasuk in its context in source number 5 in its fullest. So we'll see that man is chayiv for accidental damages. The pasuk, the Torah already tells us in Parshas Emor, when a person wounds his chaver, he wounds somebody ba'amiso in his company. What he did will be done to him, meaning that he's going to have to pay compensation. Now, what Rashi understands is that's talking about accidental. Now, let's look at source 5 and see the pasukim actually. That which this guy does to somebody else, that's going to be done to him. Namely, shever tachas shever, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, kasher yitein mum ba'adam, ken yinosin bo. Just like you caused this wound to somebody else, it has to be done to you. And as I mentioned earlier, there was never a Jewish court that inflicted physical injury as a nekama, as a revenge or retribution. The only corporal punishments ever imposed are the death penalty and makos, lashes, which were legislated by the Torah with very specific conditions. So the question, of course, then is, why would the Torah express monetary punishment in a way that could be misunderstood and taken literally to require a Jewish court to, you know, mutilate a guilty injurer? Like, so to understand what that means, and number one. And number two is, it seems as if you're telling me that this is an additional teaching, that which we learned in Parashas Mishpatim is a Kro Yisera, it's superfluous. We already learned about accidental. How do we learn about accidental? That which you did to somebody else is something that is done to you. So how do you know that's accidental? It's actually the very next psukim in Parashas Emor. That's what's described. That's what's learned. We think this is the context is we're learning about a situation where it's accidental. Okay, so that's what Rashi is understanding what the Gemara means. Now, the Rambam in Hilchas Chovel Umazik, this is very important to our study here. Rambam in Hilchas Chovel Umazik, which is the laws of injury and damage in chapter 1, Halacha Gimel, chapter 1, law 3, among others, explain that in heaven, really, Shemaya, really what's the truth is that the injurer, the person who caused the hezek, the damage, he really deserves to lose his own eye. Why? That's midas hadin. There's midas hadin and there's midas hachesed. Midas hadin is that you caused there to be a damage, so you should be compensated as such. We know that this is also true in the opening sugyas in the case of the Eidim Zomamin, Seches Makos, where a person, we had witnesses that testified about a person's doing, and as a result of what they had hoped to have fulfilled into what I testified about, now you're obligated, now you're punished in such and such a way. So we found out that the Eidim, that the witnesses, they were Zomamin, they were false witnesses, and they were, as a result of what they were going to say, going to cause this fellow to pay damages or to suffer consequences that were unfounded and were unnecessary. So what's the din? The Gemara says, based on a whole host of different sources, what the Eidim Zomamin wanted to have happen to this guy, they themselves have to suffer the consequence. So we see that technically speaking, Midas Adin related, really it is that these people are obligated to have what's visited upon, what you wanted visited upon somebody else, or what you did in the case of accidental or certainly mazed, premeditated activity where you went damaged another person's property or person. So that person really, says the Rambam, that person really, klapei Shemaya, that means in heaven, the injurer really truly midas adin, he really does deserve. He does deserve to lose his own eye. He does deserve to lose his own tooth. Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein. And he does not achieve a kapara, he says, by monetary compensation alone. So why does that happen? Okay, because there's a rules, a system that are set up. But what's necessary, he has to ask for forgiveness as well. You can't just pay for something and say, okay, that's my obligation fulfilled. He has to also, Ram says, he has to ask for forgiveness. He has to also do tshuva, for, you know, ask for forgiveness from the victim. So that's interesting that in the case of the museums, if I just gave the check to pay for it, in the world of Torah and mitzvot, says the Rambam, you have to also do tshuva. So the courts only have the authority to legislate monetary penalty. That's what we understand from the Dine, you know, the Dine Momenus, the laws of Hezek and Chovel and Mazik. Look at source number 6, where the Rambam says it's very clear. But it's interesting, he points it from another verse. The Rambam says, Zeh shenemar b'Torah, that which we understand in the Torah statement. Here he says, Kasha yitain mum b'adam, keni nostein bo. Just like we learned in Parshas Em, or just like whatever the injury is that you caused to somebody else. So too, that which somebody else, they were damaged, that which was their own, what happened to them, you have that person who did it, who was the injurer, that person has to also be caused to him. Now, we understand, now, it shouldn't be, it does not mean that the person who caused the injury should actually be subjected to a similar physical punishment. Even though that's what the pashut pshat is, right? Like we have when we wear our tzitzis, for example, urisemo, so it doesn't mean you should actually hang those tzitzis on the wall, that you should be able to see them in fulfillment of the verse, right? We know that the Torah Shebaal Peh tells us, the oral law tells us, that it means you wear it on a garment. So it means, eino lachvel bazek kemo shechavel b'chaveiro, says the Rambam, elo shehuroi lachasroi eivar, lachvel b'kasher also, ulefichach mishalem nizko. What does it mean? The intent is that he deserves, yeah, truly, the Rambam says, really, he does deserve to lose a limb. And yes, he does deserve to lose his tooth. He does deserve to be punished, actually, literally, in the same way that he caused somebody else to be damaged. But and this, but the problem is that we can't make that happen. He should make financial restitution to him. He has to also do tshuva. And therefore, that's how he does it, because that's how the courts were given the ways for people to fulfill their shortcomings. You have to pay, really. But technically, he does say, "Kasher also lefichach mishalem nitzko." Why? Because really, it should be shehu roy lechasrei aver olachvol. So a person really is roy too. The Rambam says he really is supposed to have that visited upon him. But obviously, we see that that can't happen. Now it's interesting. Vaharehu omer. Now this interpretation is supported by another pasuk, but midbar lamed hey lamed aleph lo sikchu. What does that mean? You should not accept a ransom for the soul of a murderer. And the Rambam explains, implied is that no ransom may be paid for a murderer alone, but a ransom may be paid for causing a loss of limb or other injuries. So that means monies are allowed to be. This is what the Rambam is telling us. So you have something that's really interesting in the setup here, is that the Rambam is saying that really he does deserve to live with his eye, but he does not achieve full kapara until he does tshuva. Here's the reality, though. The reality, though, is that the court system, our Sanhedrin setup system, is that they only have the power, they only have the authority to legislate monetary penalties alone. And since that's the case, we see that that's the only way it can take place. So here, literally, and then you have practically. Here you have one pasuk that means one thing, another pasuk that means something else. So here's how we have to bring this all together. So what we understand here is that the Torah in Parshas Emor in Sefer Vayikra directly obligates someone who's injured another person to compensate for damage. Now, the seemingly extraneous pasuk in Shemos, Chaf Aleph, Chaf Hey, in Parshas Mishpatim, a wound on account of wound, which follows a discussion of accidental killing, comes to extend a person's liability to include even an inadvertent injury. So that's what we understand. So it's the literal obligation of a person who injures another person, damage, that's in Parshas Emor, where we see that a person's obligated in accidental is in the context of Parshas Mishpatim. Again, if you look at Pasuk Chaf Beis in chapter 21 in Parshas Mishpatim, we'll notice that the extent, there's a discussion that's taking place. What's the conversation about accidental killing? So that accidental killing is where we understand that is where we learn what Rashi is telling us, the source that even if a person wounds somebody, damages somebody accidentally, you're still held responsible. So it goes all the more. Obviously, Allah has come if you know something, if you're premeditated, if it's flagrant, it's derelict, that we understand. Where we understand it to be accidental is in the context of the psukim. Why is it? How do we know this is true? We know this is true because it's an extra statement. The extra statement, irrespective of the fact that it's in the context of accidental, you know, of an accidental inadvertent injury, Rashi and the Gemara on the Gemara that we've learned previously is telling us that we've already learned the obligation. The obligation that we learned is from Parshas Emor. The basic obligation where a person who injures somebody else, it's not from Parshas Mishpatim. It's from Parshas Emor. And it's a direct obligation for somebody who injures another person. You have to compensate for the damages, period, hard stop. So if it's true that that's period, hard stop, so then what is the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, which we would assume is the original and only singular source? The answer is that's coming to tell us, beriboy, as an addition, that even though the context is accidental killing, you should know, that's the limud. That's what Rashi says is what we're learning. Rashi's explaining. It's coming to tell us that in a situation where you shouldn't think that it's about damages as a general statement, it's telling us specifically about accidental damages, inadvertent damages, when you're sleeping damages. And if that's the case, we see that there's like two parts of this. There's like the meta principle, and then there's even a more specific super principle. And that's what we understand. So based on this derivation, the Gemara in Bava Kama Chaf Vav Amud Beis explains that man is super obligated, even for unintentional damage. There's damage, right, that you cause it was knowingly, that you should be more careful, that you knowingly did something, whatever. But even the super obligation is even for unintentional damage. And that's what he explains based on these two sources, based on these two psukim and how we reconcile why the Torah would seemingly need to present two psukim that really you only needed to have one. Now, where this all comes together really is in source number 7, and that's the Psak Halacha. What's Psak Halacha? Psak Halacha, the final halachic ruling, is the Shulchan Aruch, where he rules accordingly in Choshen Mishpat, that man has to compensate for accidental damages. That seems to be, it's very clear. Also, look at 7. Also, lahazik mamon chavero. It is forbidden to damage another person's property. Okay, we know that. V'miziku, and if you damage, and here are the key words here, afal pisha'enu nenechayev, even though he did not benefit from it. Now, that seems to be also a little bit different. Even though he didn't benefit from it, means even that could mean that he didn't do it on purpose, he did it accidentally. But I didn't benefit from it. I'm not happy that it happened. In fact, I've lost from it. If you're going to send me a bill and I'm going to have to pay for it, not only is it a case of she'enu nena, but it's a case of I'm chayiv, and that's I'm chayiv because I have to pay for it. So the din is chayiv l'shalem nezek shalem. I have to pay a full amount. And that he explains clearly here in these last few words. Bein shahaya b'shogeg, bein shahaya onos, doesn't make a difference. Whether or not he's obligated to pay, compensate completely, whether or not it's inadvertent, it was accidental, incidental, beyond his control, and certainly if it was b'mezid. So what we understand from this Shulchan Aruch is very simple, is what we understand is we are responsible for damage we cause, whether the owner posts a sign in his store or not, whether or not I saw it or not, right? Maybe I could say I didn't see it, and therefore, because I didn't see it, maybe you put it in the back of the store, and so therefore, if I didn't see it, so therefore, okay, so I'm not held responsible. And what we understand is that even in a situation where the person does not put a sign in the store, it has been offered as a way of defense that a person will say that you didn't put the sign on the store, that if I break it, it's mine. Why do I have to tell you? I mean, we have a concept in halacha called hasara, called warning, and maybe there's something called a sign that is an indicator of the warning. And if you don't have any indication of warning, then if I break, or if I damage, if I do something on your property, then I'm not held responsible. What's called a warning. So we see that this is a very complicated topic, to say it mildly. So based on Torah law, we understand that compensation for damages can be claimed by the owner without creating any special rules for the store or any special rules for anything, your property, your home, whatever it is. You came to your house, you swung your arm, you did something. I'm not talking about Shabbos and you're held responsible for inadvertent averas. That we understand. That's true. But even a situation, you go into somebody's store, you go into somebody's home, you stand on somebody's property, did something by mistake, you could say, no, it's interesting. You could say that I didn't mean to, or I didn't see a sign. And it's interesting that the video surveillance of that museum in Italy, if you've seen that video, it shows the guy, and I'm always so curious how people would live their lives differently if they didn't think they were being recorded. I don't know, at least for myself. And I'm sure for you as well. Like everything's recorded, everything's videoed, everything like is, people are Instagramming, WhatsApp chatting, people are posting constantly. And that has changed the world. Because if you know that things that you say and the things you do are going to be recorded and held against you or support your documents, support your evidence. So notwithstanding doctoring that information, doctoring those photos and doctoring those videos, notwithstanding that, so you have a whole host of liability that's now you know, different. So what we see actually in that video, if anybody's seen that video, the guy, he sat down on, he was like, it was a piece where the cast statue was like, it was like a reclined position. And the fellow was trying to take a picture in that similar position. I guess his wife or his friend or sister, I don't know, took a picture and he was laying there. He had his hand that was laying on it. And when he got up from the picture, that's when he crunched those, you know, those toes and broke the sculpture. Now, it's interesting is you see for like a minute, he turns around, meaning if he would have just gotten up and walked away, so, and like you would see that he just seemingly didn't even realize that he sat and crunched it. So, and then maybe he would, you know, he would still be held responsible. He would still be held responsible from what we're learning. But here's what's interesting is that he turns around. It's clear that he realized that he did something. And then you see him like looking around to see if anybody else saw him, right? So I mean... because of, I don't know if it's, I didn't follow the whole story to its end, but it seems though that because of the surveillance that caught up to him, that he had to help me, you know, make a statement about, oh yeah, I didn't realize and I'm sorry and I should have and could have. I don't know how many times we've seen people say one thing and then a video surfaces about somebody else, about your opinion about something, you know, a little bit earlier in your life. And then what are you supposed to do? The video is the video. So here he was caught on camera. So much today, you see that it wouldn't make a difference necessarily, although the reason why I set this up this way, maybe there is a situation. We'll see that, as I mentioned in the class, in the questions that I answered at the beginning, as the beginning of the class, is that we see that there are situations that maybe there's a situation where a person is not held responsible. But generally speaking, we see the Shulchan Aruch says, Bein Shaya Shogeg, Bein Shaya Onos, he's Chayev L'Shalom Nezek Shalom, he has to pay the full amount. And in this case, even though he looked around and eventually it looks like he walks away, he was with a group of other people. It looks like he walks away and maybe he's going to like, oh, but I didn't want to do that. But he obviously catches up. So we are responsible for damages we cause, even if the result, it's a result of innocuous carelessness. So carelessness, the fact that you should have known. And so what we understand is according to this ruling. So in this case, this guy, he was held responsible. This guy, you know, who tripped over a shoelace and broke Chinese vases. So in 2006, he had an obligation. You have to pay for it. Now, what if, how are you going to pay for something that's so expensive like that? I don't know. You have to figure that out. Obviously, there's insurance. And you would assume that there's insurance, but suffice it to say, the chiyuv is still there. So we understand here's a few things. Is that a person, yes, is held responsible for accidental damages he causes. This obligation is based on a biblical verse and is formulated in the Mishnah. As the Shulchan Aruch records, it also has the force of practical halacha. And that's very important. It's usable and not defendable. If a person is in a category, they made a mistake, even if it was accidental, even if they were sleeping, they have to pay for it. How it can be proved, it has to be proven by verifiable means. Whether or not the store owner, the hotel, the proprietor, the property owner put a sign, it's irrelevant, it's indifferent, that makes no bearing on the obligation, the culpability. And so therefore we understand is that this liability applies even to innocent carelessness. Even if a store owner pulls no signs, gives no warnings to those who walk through their store on a person's property, one who causes damages is clearly, what it seems, without hook or by crook, is obligated to pay. Now that's as it relates to a certain sense of carelessness. Now what about a situation where there's something beyond the person's control? What if you just simply can't control it? You find yourself in an unusual circumstance. Look at source number 8. The Mishnah that's found on the following, you know, we're going to see that's also on the following page on Chaf Zion on 27a, next Mishnah, indicates that the matter isn't so simple. And that's where we're going to see that when we talk about like even contemporary times, you put yourself in a situation, there's a situation where you're careless and casual about something. And therefore, because of your carelessness and casual behavior, you're carry, as like the Pasuk says in Parashas Kisavo, that you were carry, you were casual with me. A person who's careful, careless and casual, so that person's obligated. We see that. What happens if a person's, it's out of his control. I didn't realize, whatever it is. So look at the Mishnah, source number 8. This is an interesting case. A person trips on a jug and he breaks it. So the Mishnah says the following. So the Mishnah says is Hamaniach es hakad birshus harabim. If a person leaves maniach, and who this person is, we'll just assume he's mystery person A for now. If a person leaves a jug, where does he leave a jug, a jar, a flask, whatever it is? He leaves it in birshus harabim, in a public area. Ova acher. And another person, a pedestrian, comes, and v'niskal ba ushvara. And this pedestrian, he comes and he stumbles on it, and he breaks it. So what's the din? Now, we would, if it ends right here, it would be, okay, so we've won previously that even if it's accidentally stumbles on it, he's chayiv. But that's where the Mishnah is telling us something else. The Mishnah says, v'nisko bavim shvara, pater. One second, pater, what happened here? I don't understand. He's pater, I thought he's obligated. He's pater, how do we say this Mishnah? Now, not only that, v'im huzak ba. Now, if this pedestrian is injured, he trips on and he cuts his arm. He trips on his on this potter and he breaks his leg. Chas v'shalom. So what happens? V'im huzak ba bal hechavis chayev b'nizka. The owner of the jug is liable for damages. Now we're going to see. Is that related to the fact that it was left b'rishus harabim? When you're walking in the throughfare, do you have an obligation to be discerning to see what's before you? What happens if, because of the things that you do, that it seems that you're always obligated, or maybe that's not the case? So, for example, you have many homes, maybe even some of your own homes, have lights that go on by what we call motion sensors. They go on by just movement. So let's just say it's dark outside, and as a security measure, so if there's any movement, whether it's a person or whether it's an animal, when there's light, when there's an animal that or person passes by, so that motion sensor is ignited and the light goes on. Now, is that okay? So what happens on Shabbos? You're walking past, and as a result of walking past a certain house, you know, that light goes on. So are you obligated to walk in a different direction? It's also a big discussion in the poskim. Shlomo Zalman Arbach writes that there's something called Bederech Halicha, there's something called it's a Gurama. Bederech Halicha is the normal way that a person goes. Now, obviously, if you can avoid that way without going a circuitous way that doesn't impede your by a super significant amount, so okay, so you go another way because you don't want to cause a light to go on. But the reality is that, first of all, you don't know for sure, and this is the Sugya Psik Resha, Nichale, the lo nichale, that the result of action A, by definition, results in action B, whether you like it, whether you don't like it, whether you care for it, whether you don't care for it, not our topic. But we understand here is that it seems that action A results in action B. So in this case, if the pedestrian breaks it, so it's strikingly, distinctly from what we've been learning this whole time, it's potter, he's exempt. And now that, if he himself is damaged as a result, that the owner of the jug is obligated for the damage. So the obvious question is, how can this Mishnah, which is in source 8, be reconciled with the previous Mishnah we learned in source 1? Didn't we learn that people are chayav for even accidental damages? Why is a pedestrian not liable for the broken jug if he's broken, and that's what it is? Why would you be chayav the balachavis? So obviously we understand there's way more into the picture, as we're going to see, but first we have to better understand the understanding of this Mishnah by looking at a number of different applications of this Mishnah, and to think about it in a little bit of a different way. So let's take some questions, comments, concerns. Sometimes I go a little bit longer for any questions here before we get to another source. 1 through 8, any comments, questions, concerns? Chime in, sorry, and stop a little earlier. Try to stop every few sources. Yes, Doc.
So, you know, in the first part of our discussion, it seems that the intention of the person who harms someone else is irrelevant. You harm somebody else, you're responsible for the damages. But what, you know, why shouldn't someone be held to a higher level of damages if they intentionally go out to, like, let's say, instead of tripping and breaking the toes on the statue, you went there with a sledgehammer and you decided to destroy it. Shouldn't you be held to a higher level of damage in that type of a case?
Why?
Yeah. Well, let's put it this way. Let's take another example. Let's say a con man sets up a car accident to try and, you know, get money out of somebody. They're engaging in a criminal act. I mean, and I think going and taking a sledgehammer to this statue is a criminal act also. They should be held to a higher level of liability as far as I'm concerned.
Rabbi?
Let me chime in on that for a second.
Related question.
Okay, go for it.
The Adam Muadla, reason, what does the Gemara give a specific reason why Adam Muad Le'ola?
Yeah, the Gemara, Yeah, that's part of the next section. Why is that so? Why do we believe that's true?
That would also probably cover to a certain extent something of, you know, David's question, you know, why is a guy who commits a crime with intent, you know, why is the guy who does it bishogeg, so to speak, any less liable?
Right. So let's start with this. Is there ever a precedent where a person has to pay more than the amount that he damages?
Geneva, right?
Pardon me?
Geneva? He pays four or five.
Kefo. Make Kefo.
Is the Michelin Kefo, exactly. Kefo. So the really what you're asking is, like, why should this be any different? If anything, if a guy is bemazed, a person comes with a sledgehammer, a person, you know, is deliberate and is intentional and is premeditated, so to pay the amount that you're obligated, okay, it's almost like, you know, ayin tachas ayin. You should say ayin, two eyes, tachas one eye, right? Because maybe that will prevent him. Torah doesn't say that. Now, why is, I guess the bigger question is, though, is why does Geneva, why is that a chiyuv of Kefa? Why is there a situation where there is a beyond the obligation of what it is that you damaged, what it is you stole? That to me is a bigger question. And part of what I think your question really identifies here is that the fact that he's obligated the amount that he damaged, okay, that makes sense to me. It's only more difficult and why we even wonder he should pay more as the one who's the mazid when we equivocate the person who is an oinus to have to be obligated the same way that the mazid is, right? It's a little bit of a chiddush to say that the person who does it accidentally has to pay the same amount. Maybe I would say that maybe it's to pay something. He didn't really mean to do the whole thing. It's to pay something. Answer is that we elevate him and the Mishnah says that he has to pay the exact same amount. And the fact that he has to pay the same amount, you wonder if he's to pay the same amount. That means that they're on the same level. What are they doing on the same level? The guy's accidental. He leaned over. He crunched the toes by accident versus the guy went deliberately. And therefore, it's not just that it's a compensation issue. It's a criminal issue. He's going to be tried on in multiple scenarios. It's a good question. It seems, though, that the obligation that the Torah holds a person obligated is just ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, regel tachas regel, right? That's the Torah itself. I think it's maybe even more of an interesting study to figure out why is there ever a situation of mishalim, you know, five times and two times the amount. Like, what's the circumstance of that more than what the Torah says? That's a pasuk. I struggle with it also. You should know, noting that the Mishnah equivocates both of those cases, both those situations. Yeah. You just asked a good question. I didn't give you a good answer. I don't know yet. We have to go through that a little bit. But I think the first thing is to wonder, like, first wonder why accidental is on the same level that you have to be held responsible. The idea of Adam Mu'ud La'olam, and I guess maybe Mark, to your point, is what is Adam Mu'ud La'olam? I'll tell you how some teachers I've learned from over the years have taught this to me, the concept of Adam Mu'ud La'olam. Adam Mu'ud La'olam means, obviously we learn in the case of damages, right? If you damage something, what does that mean? So Adam Mu'ud La'olam actually suggests, I think, that really you should have been more responsible. Like what does an accident really mean? Like an accident, the accident is that you should have been more careful. You should have known better. And the fact that you should have known better means that you're amazed. You're not an amazed in the sense you took a sledgehammer, but you're amazed in your negligence. Your negligence equals amazed. And the way it was explained to me in a number of other instances is, you know, there are tons of people that we all know that, you know, they'll claim ignorance. They don't know how to learn. They don't know how to read Hebrew. They don't know the dinim, right? They don't. Because I wasn't raised that way. I don't know. Whatever excuse people give. And the answer is, Adam Mu'ud La'olam. My Rabbi would say, like, Adam Mu'ud La'olam means that you have a responsibility to do it. If it's not available to you. People think that the concept of Tinuk Shenishpa means that if I didn't have a formal Jewish education, or if I was never, it was never put in front of me, so I'm a Tinuk Shenishpa, so therefore I'm putter. But it's not true, especially today, where if you surf the internet for anything and everything, so then Adam is Mu'ud La'ilam. You can find and should find and be able to access that information always. And the fact that you don't makes you, and again, these are my words, is how I've understood it, is that you are a mazid. It's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah calls oinus, but maybe the reason why they're on the same level is because they're amazed. If they're both on the same level and they're amazed, it doesn't bother me so much that he's chayev to pay, you know, shalim. He has to pay the, you know, he has to pay the whole amount. It only bothers me that amazed has to pay the same amount in context to the onus is to pay the same amount. Right? Does that make sense? And what I think he really is amazed because
one question I had is, I always understood Tinek Shanishbai is from the mouths of babes come truth. In other words, if you're sort of like totally innocent, don't know anything,
who is that?
Tell the truth.
Who is that anymore? Like, who is that? Like, unless you're on a deserted island, I'm being serious. I'm asking, that's a real question. Like, I don't know who's a Tinek Shanishbai anymore. A Tinek Shanishbai, maybe he doesn't, that they don't know. I mean, we've met people that literally know zero. That's a Rachmanis. That's you have to teach them from Aleph Beis Gimel Daled. They don't even know how to Google Chabad. They don't even know how to Google anything. Like, I don't know.
That's maybe why.
It's a good excuse. Let me say it that way.
Maybe that's why Adam Mu'ud La'olam, we don't.
That's what I'm saying. Adam Mu'ud La'olam is an indicator.
He has a responsibility. Right. Difference between right and wrong.
You should know that. Now, the fact that you, I mean, I don't know how to, maybe this is not fair. Maybe this is what's the gift of our having to pay for things that are accidental is we don't have to bring a carbon chatas and it's okay. Like we're able to bring carbonos, but maybe if he was sleeping and he like reaches out in the sleeper, he accidentally tripped. So maybe he should have been more careful. Maybe he should make sure his shoes are tied. Maybe he should make sure he pulls his bed out of the area near the light. I don't know how far that goes. Maybe you have to like tie yourself up. I don't know what that
means.
That means that you're held responsible on a level that sometimes we give ourselves patents.
Which is different. Why is this Adam Mu'ud La'olam as opposed to anybody else or anything else, like an animal or whatever? Because there's a certain character to a human being that they have a conscience. They should know the difference between right and wrong.
Right. An animal is only called Mu'ud after gores three times.
Right,
becomes
right. Because an Adam knows the difference between right and wrong.
People claim or they act as if they don't know the difference between right and wrong. The Mishnah says in those three words, Adam is Mu'ud La'olam. So you have to know the difference between what's right and wrong. You have an obligation and you have the access to do that. Why people don't do that, I don't know. How that plays itself out in accidents, a person has to be responsible. A person has to pay for it. But that's Adam Mu'ud La'olam. David, does that make sense a little bit? I think part of what's egregious is the fact that it's related to amazed. But if it wasn't related to amazed, maybe
it won't be as right, but the basic where I disagree is that this isn't morality. The real goal is the status quo ante, restore things to the way they were. And therefore, the motivation of the person involved is irrelevant. But it so happens that the person who owned the object is now not have the object. And so the goal of law is to restore.
Right, to make him whole.
Make him whole, exactly. And it's irrelevant what the motivation of the person was. The case you gave, by the way, David, of the car accident where you're setting it up, they had to create specific laws dealing with filing a fraudulent claim. Because otherwise, you're right. But you needed to add that concept to the legislation. But normally when you're dealing with property, I think the fundamental approach is restoration of the way it was before. And what motivated the person is irrelevant or why it happened.
I was just wondering about that because, in fact, you know, from a strictly legal point of view, yeah. But this Torah law have an ethical component to it, a moral component to it?
Well, if you look at what the halacha is, my position seems to suggest that it's irrelevant what your motive was, because the proof is we treat the two cases the same. We don't have a concept of what was your motive. It was destroyed. It has to be restored. So the halacha seems to be in this area. You know, when you get to other areas, you do get to notions of kato.
Right. So the question then becomes, is that just an objective, uncompromising din in Shulchan Aruch? And where that becomes fascinating is it just a din in, make, as Carol said, making somebody whole, right? Something was there, something is not there, something has to be brought back. So how far is that? What if a person is willing to be forgiving of that which was whole and doesn't want it, that doesn't care? So does that matter? Should that matter? Who's the arbiter of that? What if the Yarshim would have wanted that to be?
And it's obvious. The person doesn't want restitution. There's no restitution.
Right. So that means that there's subjectivity to here dependent on who that person is and what the circumstance is. For example, you have to injure somebody. The person has to lose a limb, God forbid, to save their life. Right. So something was lost in order for a greater good. Yatzla Schar Bav Seda, the sugya of whether or not we can value something A less, because that which was lost obviously comes at a higher gain of a person's preservation of life. That plays itself out into so many different areas, even related to contemporary conversation, because what people are doing in their positioning of even managing a pandemic is that they're now weighing things that are called what's a damage. Is it more damaging to be inside, or is it more damaging to, you know, to go outside without a mask or to be out with social distancing? Obviously, we're talking about other people here, but like, let's just say schools, for example. So parents are sending kids to schools in large numbers, even though it could be argued that the environments that these schools are providing really aren't as safe as they could be, because they're going to claim that the damage to the well-being of the child is greater if they stay home and they don't go to the school environment. Now, that's very difficult, because if they, you know, we hope that the institution will make the place safe, but we can understand that there is a possibility of mental anguish as relates to that. So you become now very at the mercy of the subjectivity. Why does the Mishnah on Chaf Zion say that in a situation that this Chavis was left in Rishus HaRabim in a public throughfare, that the accidental damager is Pater? Why? Why should it matter? Because he left it. So we're going to see that because he left it in Rishus HaRabim, the negligence is on the Bala Chavis, on the owner of the Chavis. So it, we see that there are situations that it does matter. It does matter where it was left. It does matter who the person is. It does matter the circumstance. And part of where a Sanhedrin becomes essential is to help us weigh these matters in ways that sometimes we can't know. Joseph, what do you think? I see your finger going to the unmute button.
Got unmute. The issue of the hazard in public property, it's sort of like the hardest case is Barber Shusar Rabam. If I dig a hole, and I haven't studied it in 50 years, it has to be 10 tefach. And if you do the
I think I got frozen on that board.
Frozen screen.
Not property damage as much as...
You got frozen in that board. I think you got stuck in that pit. Sorry. Start again. Sorry.
But let me say, it's a long time ago. Remember, it had to be 10 tzvachim, and the one who was responsible was the one who dug the last tefach. But right. That's a case of public nuisance, not a case of property damage. And so the source really dealing with the chavis, the object that you trip over, relates to, in fact, I remember my father explaining that Judaism had a notion of ecology and public nuisance way before Western law developed it. It took till about the 20th century to develop that area of law, but we really had it already. It's not a question of property damage. This is a whole category of public nuisance. This particular case that you have was source 8. And the hardest is Bor Bershus or Robin, because there isn't even an object that you left that you should be responsible for. And the, again, I'm remembering it from 50 years ago, but if I remember right, they say you own the air. And your ownership of the air makes you responsible for somebody who falls into the pit.
Who owns the air? The Baal HaChavis.
Well, the person who dug it, the last step.
So what in essence that is saying, which is interesting, of just rewording it and reclassifying it, is that it's not even a cheftza. It's not a keli anymore. It's an instrument of damage.
Exactly. Right?
So the reason why you're potter is because it's not that. Now it's confusing because we're using the same words. Here is a keli and he breaks it and it was accidental and he's chayev. Here is a keli, he breaks it and it's accidental and he's potter. And the answer is, I think that's a good way of saying that. The answer is that it's ois shame keli. It's not really a keli. It's a cheftza of hazard. It's a hazard, right? It's a cheftza of hazard. And a cheftza of hazard means he breaks it, he's potter, and if it damages him, so I never heard the language of he owns the air. He owns the air, meaning that the Baal HaChavis, whether he so the accidental obligation here isn't on the damager in the sense that we originally learned it. The accidental damager is the guy who leaves the pottery, even if the pottery was left accidentally, right? If he leaves it on purpose, then he's a mazik, right? Because he leaves it in an area that someone could trip and fall. But even if he leaves it accidentally, so he's also a mazik. Because why? Because what we've learned, so it's almost like, I think it's fascinating because that's actually not inconsistent. So far, what we'll understand is that they're not inconsistent. Even though the way it's set up, in the way the Mishnayos present themselves, it seems inconsistent. Accidental damage, chayev, accidental damage is potter. Answer is, it just depends on who we're calling is who's the owner of that damage. So when the owner of the damage is now the Baal HaChavis in the second case, so it's in concert because if you even accidentally left it in Rishus HaRabim, it's ois shem keli, and if it's ois shem keli, so now it's a hazard. And if it's a hazard, so if the person breaks it, he's putter. He's putter. The breaker's putter, right? But if he gets injured, then the person who's the mazik is chayiv. Now, even if he breaks it, and even if, I guess there's another added part of this, what if he has mental anguish? There's a whole other part of halacha that I think is yet to be really so developed because of course it's dealt with in halacha, but defined is harsh. Is what is mental damage? Let's say I trip on it and I had busha, right? So we know that there's embarrassment, ripoy busha, right? So I didn't break the keli, right? So I didn't slice my leg open when I didn't hurt myself physically, but I was at a busha chlima, I was embarrassed. People laughed at me. Can you assess that the same way? It seems l'chora that you would be able to. I don't know if to the same extent, but that's obviously how we're going to see how that goes. Now, in the back of my mind, in this whole conversation, of course, which motivated, L'samad Adam Re'echa and Adam Mu'ad La'olam, is this whole concept of where we find it in contemporary time. And that's really where this conversation leads itself to, is what is it that a person is responsible for in, the medical safety, well-being, and preservation of other people's lives, of your own life, of how to bring an end to a pandemic. Somebody asked me this Shabbos, Rabbi, he was standing with his son. He says, my son asked me on the way to shul, when does a pandemic end? When does a pandemic end? This little kid, Nebuchadnezzar is like walking with this kid. These are words the kids are hearing and saying and repeating. And when does it end? Like it's maybe when does the pandemic end? So I'll defer, David, to you. I assume it ends when there's enough people that have vaccinated and the numbers statistics are indicative of it not being ferocious, and right, that seems to be pretty basic to me. Is there any other indicator? Right, I mean, that's what I told him, but that's troubling because I don't know at the end of the day how many people are going to end up taking a vaccine. When is there herd immunity? Is that something you're waiting for? Like, does it become downgraded to an epidemic? Like, well, what happens? Like, what's the scale down? When does it change? When's there a status change?
When you don't see active community transmission, a pandemic means it's worldwide. I forget what the specific definition is, but when it doesn't mean when the disease is completely eradicated from the population, because that's unlikely to occur. But when you stop to see active community transmission, which is what we're seeing throughout the United States and the world right now, so we're nowhere near the end. But it's not like we're going to wake up one day and say, pandemic is over. Let's go on with our lives. it's going to be more of a drawn out process.
David, can you be liable for spreading disease? I mean, I don't know if they brought this up in medical school, but, you know, I have the virus and I deliberately go out and, you know, ignore safety and sneeze on people.
So I don't know about sneezing on people, but I know that there was some active legislation relating to people who, let's say, had HIV and did not tell their partners, and they could be held liable for disease. I actually know an attorney who prosecuted a case under the liability portion of someone's homeowner's policy for causing someone to get herpes, and was able to get damages from the homeowner's policy for liability. But you're asking me a legal question, so I'm going to bounce it to you.
There actually was a case a number of months back where somebody flew from New York back to Israel, knowing full well that he had tested positive for COVID. And I know at that point in time, Israel was planning to charge him criminally. I don't know what the final outcome was, but they were going to take legal action against him for that.
It's scary. And these are real topics, because not only is it true of people being derelict, getting on an airplane unmasked and doing that, but you have, like, you know, I'll tell you some questions that are being asked to me, and this isn't once or twice. You have a situation where there are families and children that are aching to get it, because they're seeing a world of people who are, you know, I have a nephew who's studying in yeshiva in Israel. And the population of people who did have it and had antibodies, identified antibodies, what he calls, he's a 19-year-old kid, 18-year-old kid, has freedom. He was out, he was able to leave. He's able to go out. He's able to go to the pizza shop. He's able to go to the mall. And he who didn't have it, he was on Zoom in his yeshiva in Israel. I mean, he's in his dorm room in Israel. Like, right? He was plotting. He's plotting. His parents, my brother, my sister, they were plotting. So he was like aching to get it. And he was asking, can I just go into the room with them? Can I just get it? And the problem, and he says, I'm in a statistical category of the likelihood of it, if he gets it, that it's not going to be a problem. I don't know how do you answer a question like that, because nobody knows. You never know. There are family, these whole, the measles parties that we all, you know people did over all those years ago, and still today they want to do. Because their assumption is if they get it, they develop antibodies, they're now free from it, and they're good. And we all know that that's like that's a horrific concept. Maybe it wasn't. I know that, you know, there's some of you that have shared with me that that's what how it was, you know, when you were younger. I don't know. Coronavirus is just different because we don't know enough about it. There's a huge amount of morality and ethics to these questions. Huge. That we all struggle to give answers to. Anyway. Wonderful to be with everybody. Thank you so much,
Rabbi,
for learning with me, learning together. We see this is a topic we have to spend more time delving into, digging through, and Mitzvah Hashem, continue to get the clarity that we need. I wish everybody
a wonderful day. Thank you, Rabbi.
Have a good day. Thank you, Rabbi.
Bye, everybody.